You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Take one.
Stephen and Dana, and we're in the room.
Hi, Dana.
Hey, Stephen.
We're together.
We are.
We haven't been together doing
a podcast in a long
time. I
can smell you. You can smell me.
Yeah. I can see what your legs are doing.
They're always shaking.
Always.
Sorry.
But you kept your shoes on, which I appreciate.
You're welcome. I'm in heels and there's no reason.
Literally nobody's in your office.
Absolutely
you could have been
no
in pajamas.
Reason. I could have been. And yeah. By myself. I'm wearing a little bit of a schmata today.
Yeah, a little Sally Balls silky kimono.
my Halston wrap.
Oh. Was that delicious?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. It was $3.99.
Really?
Wait, $3.99. Whatever happened to the Pax Foods? I didn't get a memo that they were ever going to go away. And lo and behold, they're gone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's what you get for charging that much for a bagel.
Bye-bye now. No more catering things for you. Bye. No more bagel plates.
None.
No more fruit platters. No more chocolate-covered fill-in-the-blanks platters.
Platters.
Platters. I was an executive assistant for a very long time, listeners, and we used Pax food a lot.
I'm sorry that part of your life has come to an end.
I didn't know I'd be mourning Pax Foods today, but
yeah,
that's
you've
where we are.
Derailed my whole intro.
Okay, go ahead. Steven has the conch shell again.
Was that?
Please. Okay. Proceed.
Hi, listeners. I'm bringing you another one of my work friends this week. And is also, because it's Mother's Day, so we wanted to do like a Mama's Month, honor thy mother moment.
Mm-hmm. Love a mother.
Love a mother. Love a mother.
Soups totes my demograph.
So we... but you're also getting a double because this is also a BPN crossover episode. We are bringing you from Broadway's Jersey Boys. From Broadway's Tina. Mm. From Broadway's Gypsy.
Mm.
Broadway's Jessica Rush.
Yes!
Hi, honey.
And what is the BPN crossover? Did you mention the podcast?
Well, obviously from the podcast Mama's Talking Loud with Jessica Rush and Kara Cooper.
Obviously.
Hi, guys. I have to say, whenever anyone wants to say Broadway's Jessica Rush, I'm here for it. I'm not mad. So thank you.
You're so welcome. You've earned it.
And also the Jefferson Awards, Jessica Rush.
Yes.
Jefferson Award winner.
I am a Jefferson Award winner. That is true. It's an asterisk on my resume.
That you and Nick Offerman.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. I like him.
Yes.
Hi, we miss you.
Hi, I miss the Tina fam. It's been a month now.
A whole month. I realized that the other day, like time's really kind of flying.
Yeah, it's weird though with like Instagram and social media and even more so than Donna Summer, there was still like social media, but like there's a lot more happening on it these days and stories being done. Like people are getting into that. And so I see y'all constantly.
Yeah.
And I still see like Carla giving us the truth, you know, from Ms. Ruth. And, you know, like, I see all these things and I can imagine what it's like there. And so I feel like I'm not really gone.
It's kind of social media at its best, right? When yes. you can keep your finger on the pulse while still moving on and doing your own stuff.
Totes.
Taking care
I mean,
of thyself.
Exactly. Exactly. We had that when Jersey Boys closed, we have a text thread that still to this day occasionally will come alive. And it's like Andy Carl, Skaggs, Quinn, myself, Kara, Sarah, like Peter Gregus sometimes, like it's all the people. And occasionally it'll come on, but I miss that. I love that. I love that I can see into what y'all are up to.
And I have a question. Mm-hmm. Why have you been gone for a month? Tell the listeners, like, what's the...
Well, you would hope and think that it's something super exciting, but really...
Yes.
and there is something that I'm working on that I'm not talking about yet, but it's a project I'm super excited about. It's not in my wheelhouse. I'm going to school for a hot minute to learn more about how to do this thing. It's in the film category. And that's a labor of love that there will be more to later on. But I left the show because I was on a principal contract, holla, and I had the choice of renewing or not. And it was one of those things where I, you know, for one, as a principal, I don't know if your listeners, how much they know, but like you can't do other things, right? Like you are stuck mm-hmm. at your show for the 6 months or the year that you've signed it. And so I say stuck. You're blessed to be a part of a, you know, production contract.
You're committed. There's no yes. like going
happily
to do a TV
glued.
Episode.
Yes,
and
yes, yes. The golden handcuffs, right? Like you're there and it's fabulous. And then when your contract comes up, but you can't go anywhere. So then since I couldn't go anywhere, I thought, okay, well, it's getting to be spring and summer, my favorite time of year with my kiddo, Elliot, who's 7.5. And
hey, Elliot!
Yes, she's awesome. And
she is awesome.
And, you know, my husband's in Moulin Rouge. So with us both being gone in the summer, that just fucking sucks. Sorry, can I cuss on your
Please.
Podcast? Oh, okay. Because I love an F-bomb. I mean, I'm a sailor, my husband says. But it just really sucks. And so I didn't want to have to be at the beach and be like, Elliot, we got to go, honey. Mom has half hour. Like, we got to, you know, cut the day short. I really wanted to enjoy it because that was something the pandemic showed me, was that it was the first time we really had time with her more than, you know, a day off on Mondays. And so I thought, well, I am privileged and extremely grateful to be in the position that my spouse is working and able to hold down that end of the fort for us, so that I could A, spend time with Elliot and be more present and just, you know, I'm limited on the amount of summers I think she's going to want to hang out with me anymore. Y'all know what I mean? Mm. Like she's going to be in third grade next year. Like she still thinks I'm pretty cool. So I'm taking advantage.
I mean, there's going to be a gap between like maybe 16 and or 17, and then it'll come back around when they're like 35.
Well, just, I'm worried it might start even earlier, Dana, because I vividly remember when I was 9, my father was doing a chorus line, and there's the lyric of, you know, she sings, and though I was 8 or 9, I hated her. And at the ballet, she sings that. Mm-hmm. And I remember being 9, and I didn't hate my mother, but I was like, I feel that way. Like I did not hate my mother, but no. I just remember having those feelings and recognizing that. But then I came back around when I was about, you're right. It was after high school, but you know,
I'm exaggerating on both accounts, on all accounts. My mom listens. So
yeah.
Happy Mother's Day.
Hi, happy Mother's Day. I love you, Mom.
But mothers and daughters, that's a whole thing.
Oh, for real.
I mean, mothers and sons, that's a whole thing too, but it's different.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very different. And then mm-hmm. gay sons and mothers is a whole different
thing. What a kerfuff.
What a kerfuff.
Kerfuff. Kerfuff. I'm going to adopt that. Kerfuff. I
Please.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to take it.
Everyone gets it.
Yes, for sure.
Everyone
for sure.
Knows
so, anyway,
what a kerfuff is.
Yes. So that's why I left, Tina. I was like, you know what? Do I want to come here 8 times a week when I, because here's the deal, y'all. Here's the truth. I always get not frustrated, but I always in the summer when I'm walking past people brunching or day drinking or sitting down and it's like 7 o'clock and it's still beautiful out and they're having moulet frites and drinks and I'm schlepping to the theater. There's always a little bit of that like, So So I made the call. I just thought, you know what? I'm going to put my family first in this moment and also make myself available for anything else. Y'all hear that? Broadway community, I did not quit the business. I am still available for all projects. Please don't.
Still Broadway's Jessica Rush.
Yes, everyone. My mother-in-law thought I was quitting the business for a minute. I had to clarify, and then I panicked, you know, and then I was like, does everyone think I'm quitting?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
But I'm not. I'm not.
Thank God. That's really funny, actually, that she assumed you were quitting the whole business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know.
You kind of have a fun story about your part in Tina, though. Your how you found Rhonda Graham. That I loved when you told me, and would love if you don't mind sharing with our listeners.
Yeah, I would love that. I haven't ever talked about it anywhere, so thanks, you guys.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. No,
breaking
so I'm a very intuitive person. Like all the woo-woo and the crazy, but I am a super intuitive person, and I manifest the shit out of things. Like my friend Katie O'Toole, who is a Jersey Boys with me, she's like, I remember you standing in the dressing room in the summer of 2013 and saying, something's got to give. I either have to book a principal or I have to have a baby. And what would be great is if I could like leave this show and do two regional gigs and then get pregnant during them so that then I have health insurance and blah, 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 because the things we have to think about, right? And then lo and behold, I did Elf at Tuts, got pregnant during that, and then did Gypsy at Chicago Shakes, which is where I won the Jeff Award. So, And then Elliot was born. So I tend to be quite the manifester. But I went to visit my bestie, Michael James Scott, in London. He was being the genie over there in Aladdin. And I saw Adrian and Tina, was blown away. I mean, sufficiently. Here's the deal. So I'm watching this show. And at the time, I was playing Joyce Bogart in Summer, the Donna Summer musical, which for those who don't know, Joyce Bogart was Donna Summer's manager. And like bestie. Okay. So then
research,
exactly. So then I go to London and I'm watching Tina and there's Rhonda Graham and she's in act one. And I'm like, okay, interesting. And she comes out and it was in the scene in the dressing room when she sings Open Arms, where all of a sudden I was like, that's my gig. That's my gig. I just had this knowing where I was like, that's my job. That's my job. And I just felt it. And Michael even talks about how I met him at the bar afterwards. He goes, and you walked in, literally the first thing you said was, I just saw my next job. I just saw it.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was my next job. At the time, they wouldn't see me. This is the part, maybe, I don't know. Did I tell you this part, Steven? So they wouldn't see me for months. For months, they were having these auditions. And my agent would say, Jess wants to come in. And Pat would be like, no, she's just not right. We want someone who's more this, more that, whatever. And it kept going. And I said, y'all, this is my gig. I'm telling you, it's my gig. I saw the show in September in London.
I have managerial experience.
Right. It's another white manager of a fierce black songstress. You know what I mean? Like this is my niche market.
Come on now.
In a jumpsuit also, P.S. In lots of jumpsuits. So finally, cut to January of 2019, they had been seeing people for literally 3 months. They're like, we haven't found anybody. This is the end. And my agent, Chris Freer, was like, okay, if you're not going to see anyone else, please then let Jessica come in for this job. And he's like, okay, but tell her to wear a ponytail and don't put a lot of makeup on and just be like, just stripped down. And I was like, okay, fine. So I go in. And then who got the fucking job?
Jessica Rush did.
Jessica
Me.
Rush.
Me, bitches. I did. Sure enough. And it was when he called and he was like, well, we got an offer for Tina. Funny story. I also got the Dear Evan Hansen offer that day too on the same phone call. That's a fun story. But I know it was crazy. But I got the call and I was like, I told y'all it was my job. I told y'all this 4 months ago. So
squeaky wheel gets the grease.
I just knew it. I just knew it was my gig. I was like, I felt it in my gut. I get these feelings, you know, and it's like, that is mine. It will be mine, you know? And yeah. And so there it was. And I did. And I got to originate my first principal role. It was amazing.
And then fast forward, so you book it and then you start rehearsals and you've had a sneak peek at this show that maybe everyone else in the room, save for Adrian, has mm-hmm. not had.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? What was it like? Phileta came over and put it on you guys. And so you're working with the same director, and I'm wondering if she talked a lot about changes they made from London and why they were making them, or changes that the Broadway company kind of made intentionally or otherwise that translated back over to London.
To be honest, Phyllida was very much like she still was again when we came back, and then when they bring understudies in or new people, she's very open to discussion and to people putting their own spin on things. And the thing was, is like Adrian, we started like it was brand new. So Adrian, there were even times where Adrian was like, I don't even know what I do here. She's like, oh, is that what I did? Like someone would tell her, do you know what I mean? But we sat down with the script and we actioned everything and we went line by line and did all that kind of table work.
How cool. That,
yeah. You know who had to learn what that was? Me.
Jessica Rush.
Broadway's Jessica Rush.
I had never actioned. I didn't go to college. I started working right away. And that was something I've never done in any of my processes with a director, at least to that degree. Like you sit down and you discuss things, but to literally take it sentence by sentence, what to strike, to wound, to flirt, to, you know. I was like, what are we doing? And all the people that went to college were like, duh, Jess, what do you mean? I was like, there's a whole thesaurus for actioning work. Like, what are we doing?
Wow.
So
what'd you
I
learn?
Something new. I learned something new. I really liked it. It actually was super helpful. So that then later on, when we were working things with understudies or when Nkeki came in or things like that, you could say, like, this is what I'm in this moment, this is what I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? And it would help them to sort of understand it a little more. And also just so that, to be honest, in those moments when you're tired or you're not quite as present as you should be, you know what the motivation is for each line. And so it helps you to be a little more truthful, I think, and forces you to be more present in those moments.
Like, can I convey this intention to the back of the house?
Right.
Oh, yes. Film. You got to be big and annoying.
Oh, you know what? Phyllida even made us go on stage. Not all of us. There were a group of people. She was like, you're not speaking loud enough. You're not projecting. There's not enough energy behind your words. This happened pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. Phyllida said, this may be Broadway, but I need y'all to learn how to project. So then the rest of us went up to the very, very last row of the balcony, literally. And people had to come out and say their lines. And we had to say if we could understand them or hear them or not.
God.
Yeah, it was.
Good.
I was like, good deal. All right. Yeah, no, I adored, you know, it's been, and this is something that, like, it was very interesting coming back from the pandemic and hard to sort of reconcile, because I discovered that the experience I had was very different from that of my Black friends and peers in our company. And that is something that we discovered within all of our work coming back with Broadway Advocacy Coalition. I would say, oh my God, the process was amazing. It was great. Like, I had a fantastic time. I felt acknowledged by the company. It was, you know, it was the type of thing with, for instance, my best friend got married literally the day after opening. I was going to need to fly. And I thought, there's no way they're going to give me these days off the next 3 days after opening off. And they did. And they were like, you know, life matters. And I remember thinking that with, like, meeting Anthony and Phyllida and Tali and saying, thank you so much for seeing me and, like, making me feel as though, oh, they want me specifically to be Rhonda and they're willing to give me these days for my life as well. That was pre-pandemic. And that is what set me off on the journey with these people. So I was coming in thinking, oh my gosh, I feel so good and it's awesome and the room is great and Adrian is such a leader and she was such a leader and a warrior and a alien. I don't know how she did what she did. So then to come back and we're doing these sort of Zooms and we're doing this, you know, equity inclusion work and this work of BAC, we did that for the first 3 or 4 days of rehearsal. It was that alone. And to discover that my experience was so different from that of my peers was heartbreaking, you know? And those of us, and a part of that, what we realized is for a lot of our process pre-pandemic, we were separated. like they would call in. And if you've seen our show, Act One is mostly not Bush. It's her time with Ike. It's the Iketts. It's we joke that like it's first act is the black act and second act is the white act. You know what I mean? Because it is very much that at the early part of her life, this was the demographic. And then as she moved into knowing Roger Davies and the 80s and England, that was a different demographic. And in our process, we were separated. And it wasn't something I even clocked, because to me, I was like, oh, they're just working those scenes. I'm not in those scenes. Do you know what I mean? But what ended up happening was that we were separated. And they didn't even, like, I know that Phyllida wasn't consciously, there's no reason to separate us. It's not, you know, it's because that's how the show is set up. But it wasn't a good experience on both sides. And that was really interesting for all of us to discover.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
And work through. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It's a lot to register. I wasn't there for any of that. I came in as a swing that ended up staying a lot longer. And
Well, I do have to say that, you know, we were a very close company pre-pandemic. I always joked, if you follow me on Instagram and like my stories during the pandemic, whenever they would talk about us when we would return, I was like, I can't wait to be hugging stage right, because we used to hug like y'all. And there's hugging still happens, but there used to be massive hugging that happened during Nutbush. And that first scene, after they come off from the first scene, before they go back on for the end of scene one. And they would come off stage, the Nutbush, you know, folk would come off stage, the ancestors, we now call them. That was a change that happened when we came back post-pandemic, when they would come off stage and we're all standing there sweetening the music and singing the vocal lines, and we're all about to go on for the dance number in a couple scenes. And so there'd be all this hugging, and I was like, I can't wait till we're all back hugging. There was so much hugging, y'all, that when the pandemic first started, when we didn't know it was going to be a pandemic, when we didn't know we were going to shut down, there was just, you know,
remember that?
Oh my God. We were hearing about the, you know, the usher who tested positive, and they were cleaning the theater and they were doing all these things. And I remember being in a company meeting and saying, maybe we don't hug right now. Like maybe we just like, hey guys, like, hey, love you. You know what I mean? Like, what's up? How's it going? Pat on the back, or just a wave. Yeah. Like perhaps we're not all in each other's space, because we didn't know. Right.
And we didn't have masks.
We didn't know anything. And then, so when we were separated, all I could think about was getting back and hugging those people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I want to hug my company. I want to get back. I want to be in that space, because that company is a very present, positive company. It's unlike any company I've ever been in. And they are,
we all like each other a lot.
Yeah. Like there can be issues, obviously, but at its core, I don't dislike anyone. You know, there's no one that I'd be like, oh, I don't want that person to come, you know?
Certainly. Yeah. Especially, you know, I notice across departments, you know, it's not clicky. It's not like sound hangs out with sound and doesn't talk to anyone else, and cast hangs out with cast, and that's it. And everybody is so, those lines are so blurred.
When Ari said she wanted to hang out with you, I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, duh. I mean,
what?
Ari has fine taste.
Ari is a queen.
Ari is awesome. We did summer together in La Jolla, and then she did not do the Broadway production, but I loved having Ari join our company this time around. She got like three shows in or something, and then the pandemic hit, but having Ari with us. So what I'm saying is, then we came back from the pandemic, and that work that we did with BAC made us even closer. Like, it was raw and emotional and exhausting and broke us down and open completely. And yet I was like, I have never felt closer to anybody, any company, than I feel right now. And then we carried that through, I think, you know, I think we're all very real with one another, for good or bad, you know.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You were in such a historic production of Gypsy. You did it with Patty on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not only did I see it, I saw it front row three times because of that lottery and that student rush.
Did you ever see me?
I'm sure I did. I meant to check my playbills.
I'll have to check mine too, because I saw it.
I went on like 30 some odd times.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Of course you did.
Yeah.
Of course you did. I certainly have yet to work with a legend of that stature, right?
Yeah.
In a Broadway capacity, no less. I don't want to be like, tell me Patti LuPone stories, but I want to know, as a, you know, what did that force you to step up to be? What were you conscious of? What were you, because, you know, when I imagine it, my only thought would be, don't get fired and like, don't, like, just stay under the radar. Yeah. Don't.
I have some good, some stories. Would you like some stories?
I want to know, like, what does that force you to step up to be that?
It definitely forces you. It sets an example. And that is something that, it was my Broadway debut. So I was the waitress in the Chinese restaurant and I was Renee the maid. But really, I was just there for Laura. I was there to stand by for Laura Benanti, who is my dear friend and was like the most wonderful to understudy for my first time out, because I'd been on tour.
Quick interjection. I saw All About Eve Uptown, and before it, Lynn hosted like a Q&A with Bebe Neuwirth and Laura Benanti, and she totally shouted you out.
She
totally did, because somehow they were talking about, I think Lynn asked Bebe about when she was an understudy in Chorus Line or something, and then Laura was talking about, you know, the standby she's had and her experience with Rebecca Luker and how she tries to pay that forward. And she talked about Jessica Rouse, who stood by for her in Gypsy, and what a wonderful, like, lifelong friend that she has remained friends with her swings, and that culture of Eve Harrington-ing the role was not her experience as an understudy or with her understudies.
Oh, I love that.
And used you as an example of that.
Well, thank you for telling me that. That just like made my whole night. No, Laura was fantastic. And the first time I went on was shortly after opening, and she had walking pneumonia, and
that girl cannot catch a break.
Her immune system her immune system is delicate, for sure. Just as what she's been given, right? But she had walking pneumonia, and we had only opened maybe like a week or two before. I did not have costumes of my own. I did not have wigs yet, because a lot of times they don't start building your costumes till the show opens, which in the time of COVID might behoove them to do it sooner, right? it's a better idea. So I got a call. The first call came in from my agent, actually. And she said, I don't know what I have to do, but I'm going to be there tonight. She's like, I'm going to get the ticket. Don't worry about it. And I was like, wait, because no one had called me yet. And it was a Tuesday. And I was like, I'm sorry. She goes, oh, they just, wardrobe from Gypsy called us asking for your number and you're going on tonight. And I was like, what? So I met Robert Guy, who is our wardrobe supervisor. He's incredible. I met him at Bloomingdale's. We tried on gowns because I could wear most of Laura's stuff, but anything that had boning in it, like a corset, was never going to get on me. She is a very small boned person, and my rib cage is not. So we found some gowns at Bloomingdale's. They cut holes into her wig so that it would fit my head, because my head is big, and all these things. We did all these things. I had never had a put in. I want to say this again for the kids listening, because there's a lot of stuff.
That's so not fair or safe.
But there's a lot of stuff nowadays where people are like, I haven't had to put in, or I need to put in, or whatever. The bottom line is,
delicately say what a put in is.
Yes. So a put in is when, if someone is an understudy or a swing, or, and so they are given the opportunity to do the show in full costume, full wigs, lights, sets, everything. The rest of the company is not in costume. Usually that's how it goes. And you come in the afternoon and you do the entire show like it's the real show, so that the person who has to do that role knows what it's like to do the show in their clothes, in the wig, with the sound and the lights, mm-hmm. and the band and the set and the props,
and
all
the
these things,
traffic
back, all of it, all of it. So it's really helpful, right? I have actually never had to put in for any role that I understudied. I've always been thrown on before it happened.
Broadway's
so like,
Jessica,
so
nightmare
for me, whenever I hear kids these days who are like, I can't go, I haven't had to put in. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, like, your job is still to be ready, whether or not you have a put in. Like, that's our job, right? Mm. We're supposed to watch in rehearsal. We're supposed to take notes. That's our job is to be ready one way or another. And if you feel unsafe, that's a different story. But if it's just a matter of, I'm not sure because I just haven't been right. rehearsing with anything or whatever, then maybe I think you could probably do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, shove with love. It is what it is. So I'd never been on. I'd never had a put in. And if we all know Gypsy, at the end, there's a strip and these changes. Some of them, she takes her dress off on stage. Others are happening off stage, literally 6 seconds, I remember. Mm-hmm. And Tree Lanon who is Laura's dresser everywhere. She was the dresser at Gypsy. She saved my life. Your dresser will always save your life, people. Putting me in the right direction, showing me where to go, giving me the water, knowing what I needed. And I went on that night for the very first time. Also, a little tidbit, my husband had brought me a juice from Green Symphony. Did not know I was allergic to raw carrots at that point, y'all. I drank the juice. I lost my voice. And it was places that I was like this because I was having allergic reactions.
To carrots.
Not had a raw carrot in your life?
I had not had raw carrot juice. Like, I guess I'd eaten like baby carrots, but.
But a juice of
but
carrot.
But a juice
is a
of
lot
just
of carrot.
Carrot. Yes. And luckily,
one must know that
no,
one
I
must
didn't
be
know.
Allergic to carrots.
At the age of 27, I did not know that. And so luckily, you know, the kids don't grow up for a while. So I had a good 25 minutes and I got it back and it was all fine. And so,
whoa.
But the Patty bit is, you know, it's the birthday scene when you first
totally
see them.
Totally forgot she was in this. Continue.
Totally forgot Patty existed.
And so she comes out of the door with the birthday cake.
Yeah.
And she opens the door and she goes, "Happy birthday, darling." And I looked in her eyes and I remember thinking, oh my God, oh my God. Patti LuPone is looking in my eyes. I'm on stage with Patti. All this is in my mind while I'm on stage in this moment. First time on a Broadway stage. I only made my debut a couple weeks before. Like, I'm just like, oh my fucking God.
It's happening so fast.
Patti LuPone is talking to me. It's me. It's me. She's acting with me. It was crazy. And she likes to talk about the fact that these candles on the cake were electric, obviously. So I had to flip a switch on the back of the cake when I blew them out. And apparently when I went to, this is a visual, so I'm going to describe it for all you listeners. But my hand, imagine you're reaching to flip a switch and it's like shaking like uncontrollably. I didn't realize
your key in the door.
It looked like you were trying to make a Polaroid picture come to life. That's
well
how shaky you were.
Do you know what? I didn't know I was shaky at the time, but at intermission, Patty turned to me. We finish act one and Patty turns to me. She goes, "Well, I didn't think you were gonna make it." She was like, "When you reached forward to turn off that cake, your hand was just like, oh, shaking it.
Flap, 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 flap."
Yeah, because my adrenaline was just
through the roof.
And I made it through. And then with the changes, with the strip, we got through that. I don't know. It was, you know, it's being a shot out of a cannon. It's like I blacked out. I don't even remember what it was. And then ultimately, I got so many opportunities to go on because Laura was filming or she was ill or she was whatever. Like, she had, you know, that I... Boyd and Patty and I had this show of our own. But what all this goes back to is talking about what I learned. And what I learned is what was reinstilled in me, I think, is work ethic. And that is something that I will not get on too much of a soapbox right now about, but work ethic is struggling right now a little bit. And I think that there's been a bit of forgetting about we are a team, right? And everyone's looking out for themselves. And I say that with respect to the fact that we're all being more aware now of how shitty the schedule is. And I understand that, like, we don't want to kill our bodies anymore. I understand that. But there is a sense of, I'm tired. I'm just not going to do it.
I mean, this is coming from someone who raw dogged a put-in. You better listen up. I'm just, this is Broadway's Jessica fucking Rush.
I know.
Happy Mother's Day. I mean, come on. Wait,
speaking
where are you
of
from?
Patty is a mother. I'm from Texas originally.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But girl. You know what? We did that show for a year and not anyone took a vacation. Because you know why? Patty LuPone didn't take a vacation. She missed. She set an example, right? Like she's old school style, and Boyd is old school style. And I don't even think it's old school so much as just respecting what we're doing, right? Like recognizing everyone's fucking tired, especially these days. Everyone's fucking exhausted. Okay. Mm-hmm. And talk to the mothers. You know what I mean? Like talk to me after I've been up since 6 getting my kid ready to do this. And I've been, or on a 2-show day, I've already been to a soccer game and a birthday party. And now I'm coming in for the matinee and you're like, good morning. And you're like, fucking A. You know what I mean? Like,
fast forward to 10:30, you're singing Open Arms. And
yes.
Wrap it up.
Yes. Yes. But I'm just
oh, and
saying,
a mega
like,
mix. Wrap
no,
it up.
No, thank God. That was the best. Oh my God. Not having to do that mega mix was the best gift ever. But like, I just, and I understand that we're all trying to find the balance, but there is a lack of, I think, awareness for the team aspect of like, oh, if I call out, we're already down people. And if I call out, then what does that mean? And how hard then do my coworkers have to work? Or how hard do the dressers have to work to switch costumes out between shows on a Wednesday and you do one and not the second? You know what I mean? Like there are these things that it's like, they don't teach the base. I don't think that they're being, I don't think the colleges are teaching them the logistical sort of the things you should know, right? Ooh. The backstage
that's
etiquette.
That's probably true.
The things
that's
that are
really
happening.
Interesting.
And
that's true.
And if you come in and you're not wanting to hear those things, then that's a struggle too. But Patty LuPone was only out like 4 times. Once, the first time she went out was for a premiere and then she broke her toe. I don't know if y'all remember this, but she did the show in isotoner slippers for
incredible.
Like 6 weeks and not even a cute isotoner, like a pull on isotoner slippers, but yeah. I digress. But she and Boyd and Laura, they all set an example. When they were there, they were in it to win it. And, you know, Patty has a reputation, diva. She flies off the handle, this and that. Well, part of it, when you see it in action, at least for me, she's Italian, like she's an Italian mother and she reacts that way, right? Like she just, they react with all this emotion and energy and they lunge for you and then they bring it back and like, oh, sorry, darling, you know? And you're like, well, cause she-
But are you hungry?
Right. Cause she and I had a couple moments, but like she wants to know like who's on props, who's the sub that's in, who's going out. She wants to know backstage, who is this person that's handing me this prop? Because if I come off stage and I've never seen this person, that might throw me. But also just to know who they are. It's like my husband told me, Hugh Jackman, like on Greatest Showman, he buys lottery tickets every Friday and goes up and gives them to each crew person and says their name and says like, hey, Paul, how are the kids? Do you know what I'm saying? It's yeah. That kind of example and leadership that you hope will carry through, right? Like that
they
is,
make it look easy, but it's not. It takes work.
It does take work. It does take care. Work. Yeah, mm-hmm. To care. And then they expect that of the people they're around. And then you want to rise to that, yeah. Ideally, right?
You must be a company manager's dream.
They always tell me I should be a stage manager because I like rules and I like the things and I don't like people, you know, I don't like lying. I mean, my castmates at Tina know this. They know. They always roll their eyes at me. They're like, ah, Jess, here she goes. Like, this is Broadway. And I'm like, but it is fucking Broadway. You know? So it's all in love. And
you love to be there. I love my job.
It's the highest we can go. It's the top tier, y'all. Like, and that's all is that I want us to not forget that, right? Like, I know there's all the rest of the bullshit, but like, they're the dreams that happen, the dreams that people have. Maybe. I remember being like, I will sweep the stage if they will just let me be on a Broadway. You know what I mean?
Justin just said that to me this weekend. I've been running the Ike track while Dan is out. And, you know, I've done it a couple of times, but it's not in my bones yet. I don't trust myself. I'm sweating through my clothes because the heat is still on.
Oh, my God.
So it's a swamp. Oh, awesome. And he just looks at me. He's like, I love how seriously you're taking this. I'm like, it's Broadway.
Right.
I know it's a suit jacket and some pants.
Also, does like, he know who he's talking to?
Hello.
I mean, I know.
I am a theater kid who found wardrobe, not a clothes person that found the theater. So it's I get that. Like,
oh, I love that.
You know, it's Broadway.
Yeah. No, I get it. I remember
Elizabeth
there was this
Taylor
one.
Works here. Like,
I mean, it's people. Celebrities talk about how hard it is to be here. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is hard. It's a hard fucking job. So why not make it the best we can do, you know, and respect it as such? It really ain't rocket science. We're not, you know what I mean? We're saving lives in our own way. But like, y'all, at the end of the day, look at what we're being paid to do. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all that. I want to tell you one more story about Patty, is that I won't say the person by name. There was an ensemble member who was always late to places, always. And they were a Hollywood blonde. And so this meant that when they were in Uncle Jocko's, they were a mom. They only had to have a wig prep in and like no makeup. They didn't even have wigs. They just had to put a hat on their head, come on stage. This person was always late. Patty also had to be ready at places, right?
Mm-hmm.
So-and-so, places has been called. So-and-so, places has been called. The stage manager would give over and over.
No.
One day, Patty LuPone got on the microphone.
No.
Yes. And she called this person by name, and I won't do it. But she said, Joe, it wasn't Joe. There was no Joe, and it was a woman. Joe, I have a mountain to climb. And if I can be ready at places, so can you.
That's pretty democratic.
Yeah. She's not wrong.
That's my biggest fear, right? Somebody calling you out.
I would be horrified.
In front of everyone. And knowing that they're right.
Yes.
And knowing that you deserved it. Because, I can't imagine being that person going down those stairs.
Yes. I will never
forget. Were they ever late again? Were they ever late again?
Nope.
I was going to ask, how was that received? Was it like...
They were horrified. They were horrified. I mean, and rightly so. And it wasn't like Patty got on the horn the first time and like called them out. This was a recurring problem, a pattern. And at the end of the day, like Adrian led us, Patty was leading and she was done with it. You know, it's like after stage management isn't getting it done, then sometimes you need the leader to step up and be like, okay, look, not cool. Come on. You know, come on. Respect your company. Respect the thing. So anyway,
yeah, sometimes the source does matter.
Yes,
for some people. Yes. And
so I love my time with Patty, but there I know that everyone has their own stories for us.
Sure, but you know, whatever everybody's stories are, it's rarefied air and everybody knows it, positive or negative. It is a rare experience to get to experience from an inside looking out perspective, right?
Yeah.
I
need to get off the soapbox. Do you have something fun for me to talk about?
I do. I want to know about like the things at the center of your baseball, the performances and the shows that, you know, you were a kid in Texas watching the Tonys and said, ooh, I'm going to do that. These are the musicals that get me going.
Are you so intensely in love with your job? Like what made you?
Thank you.
That?
What a great way to ask that question.
Thank you.
For me, it's Rosie O'Donnell. So go ahead.
No, I am intensely in love with my job. It's like Justin, like you were just saying, Justin said that to you backstage. When I told Justin I was leaving the show, the first thing he said, he goes, but you love Broadway. I was like, I know. I was like, but I'm just going to go do more of it. Like, I'm going to take some time. So yes, I love Broadway. My parents love Broadway. I will tell y'all that my parents met in a theater department in college. They're community theater actors. My dad was a high school drama teacher for 40 years. No, 39, something like that. My parents named me Jessica because they thought Jessica Rush was a good stage name. I'm not even kidding. That it would look good on a marquee.
You know what?
People often ask if it's my real name. It is my real name, but... And my birth announcement said a star is born. So basically I had no choice, y'all. My mother did Godspell when she was 7 months pregnant with me. So
it chose
I've been
you.
In it forever. Yeah. I mean, I was 10 weeks old and my dad was holding me when he was Mottle the Tailor in Fiddler on the Roof and I was their baby. You know what I mean? Like I grew up, my happiest memories are laying on a pallet, like in the back of a theater in the dark, and mm-hmm. listening to them like rehearsing, teching or whatever, you know, like when I was smaller and not in the show. Most of the time yeah. they found a place for me to be in the show, and I just went with them all the time. So so that was where it was born. I don't have a clear moment of like, that's what I want to do. It just was always who I was. It was just a part of who I am. Yeah, it was all of it. I will say my Tony story. Well, I was irate that Ragtime lost the Tony because I adored Ragtime. Les Mis is my dream. Les Mis, Ragtime, you know, those nice big grand.
Sing.
Yes, a big sing. Those are my shows. I remember being 7 years old and 7 or 8 and listening to Les Mis and singing I Dreamed a Dream and being able to do the Shame when she goes up the scale. I remember doing that all in one breath when I was like 8 years old. And I thought, oh, yes, I did it.
Yes,
I did it. That was like the thing. And I remember watching Daisy Egan win the Tony. I've told her this story probably more than once when I've been drinking, but I have told her the story of how I watched her win that Tony. And I kid you, kid you not, I said, now I'll never be the youngest person to win a Tony. Because we're the same age. So there was that. I mean, we moved a lot when I was growing up. When I was going into the eighth grade, we moved to Florida, to Orlando. And my dad and I actually went on a non-equity tour of Christmas Carol that he had done years before. We did the bus and truck for a few months together. And then I went to 4 high schools. We moved 3 times when I was in high school. From Orlando, middle of my sophomore year, we moved to San Antonio. My dad was hired to start a new musical theater magnet school, which is still there, called Northeast School of the Arts.
Wow.
People know about it. Yeah. He was the administrator and they were designing it. So the second half of my sophomore year, it wasn't open yet. So I went to a different high school. Anyway, so then when the school opened my junior year, I went there for a year, but then my dad hated being an administrator and missed working with students. So we moved back to Orlando, but I went to a different high school. So I had a very like tumultuous, right? High school career. But theater was always where I found my people, right? Like I always knew that when I got to a new school, I would go to the theater department and then I could find the people what I did. And yeah, and I was good to go. But I mean, I grew up singing Last Night of the World with my dad in the car, which is totally so appropriate, you guys. Just
so
stay with me. Just like not even okay. But I had no other.
So sweet.
Yeah, there was nothing else. It was always this, which is, and that pandemic really made that clear. I have to say, like, mm-hmm. that was one thing as I saw people leaving and becoming realtors or doing a desk job or teaching or whatever. And it was that moment where you think, do I stay or do I go? And all it did for me was clarify the I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, the thought of leaving was so.
No, I couldn't wait to get back. I was like, no, nope, this is cool. I don't need my weekends.
You're like, I have a disease.
Right.
This is me, guys. This
yep.
is it.
It's, I love musical theater, you know, and my husband is a closet musical theater nerd. He every now and then, I was singing, I Know Him So Well or something. No, yes. I was singing one day, like randomly, and I don't sing show tunes often, but sometimes I get it in me and I was doing it. And all of a sudden from the other part of the house, I hear him singing the other part. Yeah. I'm like, wasn't it good? And he's like, oh so good. He's singing it. And then, we just kept going. I didn't talk. I didn't stop. I just kept going. And we went all the way to the end of the song.
I bet that sounded so good.
But he doesn't, you know, he plays it cool all the time, but
well, sure.
We both grew up doing musical theater. We love it. It's like, it's what we do.
Listeners, go see him in Moulin Rouge if you have not already.
Yes, yes. He's just got put on the pillar, y'all. It's really exciting.
I want to see that so bad.
The new pillar.
The pillar outside.
Have you seen our new, have you walked by the theater at all?
Yeah, well, I went and saw Beetlejuice yesterday. And so I was across the street. And so
you saw
I saw the photos. Yes. Look at all that production photos.
Wild.
They said, we're going to sit here for a minute. I mean, it's always a good thing. These are the things you learn.
Yeah,
that told right?
us. And they changed our playbill, too. They put...
Nkeki on it. Yeah, the key art.
Photo on it. It's like, yeah. Again, still in color.
I know. Good I sign. Mean, these are the things for the insider knowledge, y'all. Like, you pay attention to these things. if they're having a photo call and they're doing photos, then that's a good sign. If the playbill is still in color. When the playbill goes black and white, you want to get a little nervous, but yeah. You know.
Jessica, can I derail this conversation?
Yes.
Just the tiniest.
Please,
bit.
I'm talking. Y'all,
you are so beautiful. It's like hard to look at you. do you do any face things, like modeling, like just showing up places, photography? Bless. Nude modeling, like what is like what? Dana. Are we being paid?
No,
are we monetizing kind of like, the?
No, I would love
routine?
It. Does someone want to send me some skincare? Do you know what I for years use Fresh products. I do have to say a lot of this is genetics. My okay, grandmother, yeah. My grandmother washed her face with Ivory soap and water. And when she died at the age of 90, she still looked fabulous. So like,
egad.
I have to, and my mother has really good skin. It's funny because I swear to God, I have different skin on my hands versus my face, right? Like I look at my hands and my feet and I feel like that's the skin from my dad's side. I'm not even kidding.
Oh my
gosh. And then I feel like I have the skin from my mom's side on my face. But I thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate it. No.
Am I wrong? Like,
no, she's stunning.
It's hard. Like,
and you know what? My friend Amber used to say to me on tour, she'd be like, and you don't even always wash your face at night. Like, I don't. I just, you know.
You're gross.
But a lot of times I'll just use a wipe. I'd said that to Offer one day in the dressing room. I was like, sometimes I just do a wipe and I go to bed. And Offer was like, I can't believe this. But I use Fresh products too. A lot. I really like Fresh. They're black tea, age delay. They do have good lip balm. But I'm going to start. And I also have started using some Drunk Elephant.
Ooh,
so
I like the name.
Yeah. Yeah. Drunk Elephant. It's all organic and like, you know, no parabens and it's natural botanicals. And, but that's it. I'm lamenting my neck lately. I feel like the lines are coming. Yeah. It's happening. I mean, I'm 41 now and I'll say it. There's
it looks
that.
Like someone cut my head off twice.
This is, twice. I know.
Like people have to look at me like that. Are you serious?
You know what else it is? Like, it's not just the lines. It's like the crepiness right here. And I just can't. It's aging. It's what it is. And it's a bitch.
Like,
it's real.
Bless everyone. Like, necks and neck. I mean, we can use a
yeah, I mean,
neck if we want, which I, we all
you know
look
what?
Right at your own neck.
Nora Ephron wrote a book called I Feel Bad About My Neck. And I didn't really get it until now.
Me
now
neither.
Me neither.
Yeah. And I read it and I'm like, what is she complaining about? Oh, you know, cut to 5 years later.
Now I'm like, scarves. No. I mean, it is what it is, but I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm holding on to it desperately as hard as I can. You know, and we all have other things. I look at my arms, at my forearms. I'm like, where did those sunspots come? You know what I mean? Like it's, so we pick our, we highlight what we can.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
Well, it's been very nice looking at you this whole time.
Well, thanks. I will say that. Also, I feel like these have some sort of filter to them because I feel like it's always just a little fuzzy enough or like pleasant.
Like a Vaseline lens.
Yes.
Maybe I do have
like
Vaseline.
A Barbara Walters. See? Oh, yeah.
Just let me...
A little smudge.
A little smudge. Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, I thought you looked fabulous anyway, so...
Glow.
Yeah.
Stop.
Hi-ho! Hi-ho! Hi-ho!
I have one last question for you in the minutes we have left that we have asked every guest on this podcast. There are 7 very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the 8th dwarf, what would your name be?
Anxiety Dwarf.
That's our first Anxiety Dwarf.
That is our first Anxiety Dwarf.
Yeah.
Is it really? That's me.
Yeah.
No,
I've got for sure.
Anxiety is real. No,
okay.
I'm
okay.
No question.
Yeah.
Great.
You know.
We would have been so close in high school because I campaigned for the senior superlative of most stressed.
Did you really?
I really wanted it, yeah.
Do you know what? I always thought I didn't have anxiety. And then I had a child and my anxiety went like through the fucking roof. And I thought it was only because of her. But then I'm reading these memes lately and it's like, if you were too scared to do things when you were a kid because you thought you would die, that's anxiety. And I was like, oh my God, I always tell people the DARE program came and spoke to us and they said, they said, everybody's body is different. Some people could do a drug over and over again and they're fine. And some people could do it one time and it could kill them. And I thought that would be my luck and I will never do a drug and I've never done drugs. It worked.
Just say
I
no.
I won't do drugs. A, won't have an attitude. R, I will respect myself. E, I will educate me now.
I forgot that song.
The musical.
Oh my God. That's amazing. So yeah, Anxiety Dwarf. I'll lean into it. You're not alone, guys.
You're Dare Dwarf.
Dare Dwarf. That's better. That flows better. Dare Dwarf.
The Dare Dwarf.
It's a bit of a tongue twister.
I'm really excited for Dare Dwarf O'Connell and her Tony nomination.
Dare
for
Dwarf
Dana
O'Connell.
H.
You're Frida. Dare Dwarf.
You're Frida Kahlo. And this has been In the Room with Stephen and Dana. Wait,
you're a monster.
You need to end this.
Jessica, thank you for spending your Monday with us.
Thank you. I could keep talking, y'all. So it's a good thing you're toning me off. I like to chat, but
happy Mother's Month.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
To all the mamas, Broadway and otherwise out there.
Yeah, thanks for the support.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Where can we find all of your business?
Oh my God. I have so many things.
Here we go. Here we
go.
Get a pen.
The podcast, as you said, is Mama's Talking Loud. We have like 93 episodes, y'all. So come on over. And it started.
Oh my gosh. We're so close.
Oh, really?
96.
Yeah.
Well, and we're about to be done, but probably we'll see. But we have been going. We've got everybody. We've got them from Audra to like, you know, Tara Rubin. We've got everybody in between on all sides of the table. So come over there. It is not. People worry that it's about moms only. It's much more about life through the lens of motherhood. So you, even if you're not a mother, I have lots of people tell me, even if they're not a mother, they love listening. So there's that. Mama's Talking Loud on the Broadway Podcast Network and on Instagram. My business that I started with Elliot during the pandemic is called Ivy and Clark with an E. That's also on Instagram. And we make bracelets with gemstones, bespoke beaded bracelets.
Bespoke beaded, also a tongue twister.
Yeah, bespoke beaded bracelets. And then my Instagram is Jess is a Rush, not Jessica Rush. Jess is a Rush.
Noted.
Yeah, and
clever,
you can find all my things there. And also Broadway Baby Mamas is another. I run 4 Instagrams. It's also our Instagram, and it's we highlight mothers in the Broadway business.
That's
the Jessica Rush Empire.
You know what? I've discovered I'm really passionate about amplifying those voices when I can. So
let's do it.
Yeah. So thanks. Thank you guys for having me. I'll come back anytime and just keep.
Oh, it's just so good to see you again and without a mask.
I know. Look at that. I see your whole face.
Dreams.
I know. These are the days, y'all. These are the days.
And on that note.
Which note?
Bye.
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 In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.